when you walk into the ring for the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio people, thank you so much. Dear Blood River Radio family, excuse me, not just people, because the people listening to this show keep us going. You really are like family. And also, I'd like to tell you people out there again, you family members, happy Thanksgiving. We won't, it's not Thanksgiving yet, but since we won't be broadcasting on Thanksgiving Day, I'd just like to say happy Thanksgiving 20 in the year of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ 2024. If you listened in, I think I could have done a better job on the first hour because I'm not as knowledgeable with Miss Ursula Haverbeck, bless her heart, as a lot of other people. And But I'll bet you that Braveheart, Miss Monica Schaefer, and my brother Paul Fromm, I bet they're very versed about that. But we're definitely going to give her some more a memorial. But we also have some very important things that are going on that has to do with white genocide. First part of genocide, probably a lot of times, is ethnic cleansing. And that's going on not only in the United States and Germany, but it's going on big time in Canada. And we're going to talk about that some quite a bit, actually, in this hour here. And we're going to talk about with Sister Braveheart, like I just said, and like also Brother Paul. So before we start talking about anything, let's let the people say howdy-do to the Blood River Radio family members. Sister Braveheart, since you being a lady, and we're old-fashioned here, and we like to consider ourselves gentlemanly and cavalry, and you know, what's that word I'm looking for? A gentleman. Not cavalier. I can't think of that term. Anyway, we are gentlemanly here, and we honor ladies here, so we'd like to bring you, even though you're a fighting tiger, you're still a lady, and I'd like to invite you to say hello to all the people tonight, Sister Monica.
That puts a big smile on my face. I was trying to interject there. I'm not sure if you heard me say the word chivalry. Is that what you were looking for, Eddie?
Chivalry! That's it, chivalry. Golly, my mind is going blank. Little Lizzie, Miss Teenage America's dad, said that he appreciated me being chivalrous before. So that made my day.
I always appreciate it, always. And I am very happy to, when a man opens a door for me, I thank him, and I'm not one of those... what would you call them, wokes, or these days they have all kinds of terms for, you know, women who will maybe spit at the guy or just fume at him and say, oh, I can open my own door. I don't do that, that's for sure.
I've had that happen.
They're called pink-haired cat ladies.
Yes, that's right. Tattooed, pink-haired, purple-haired, tattooed cat ladies.
Oh, dear.
I'm glad to have you on tonight. So,
go ahead. Go over to Paul to make his greeting.
I was just going to say thank you for coming in. And now we go. Brother Paul, how are you doing tonight? You ready to rock and roll, Brother Paul?
I am doing very well. I'm in my car. I'm warming up. I was at a new place. It's probably my 137th different freedom protest in the past 4 years. It was in Port Credit, Ontario, just outside the lighthouse, and mostly Polish people there, but all good people, braving the cold, waving the old Canadian Red Ensign and banners calling for Trudeau's being jailed and warning against the cashless society and just a great freedom protest. So it's good to be in the car and good to warm up and good to wish all your listeners in the United States a happy Thanksgiving this coming Thursday.
Well, I'm sure I appreciate that, and I'm sure they appreciate it as well. And I'm most assured, I can mostly assure you, surely.
Eddie, you're cutting in and out. I don't know if you can hear. You're cutting in and out.
Oh, yes. Am I coming okay? Am I doing okay now? Okay. I might have been moving around too much, but anyway, like I was going to say, our listeners, our family members, they love the education they get from Paul because Paul has been in this movement since the 60s. There's not much that he hadn't dealt with, not much he hadn't seen. Sister Monica hadn't been around quite that long, but she's dealt with the beast up close and personal in prison. She once did, I think, 10 months in the Gulag prison in Germany for the Holocaust denial. Sister Monica, before we get into the ethnic cleansing from the East Indians in Canada, before we get into that, would you like to say some things about Ursula Haverbeck?
Yes.
Haverbeck, excuse me.
I would be happy to pay tribute to the great heroine or hero. I don't know if we have to say heroine for the feminine, but anyway, Ursula Haverbeck. She was born in 1928 in Germany, and she was absolutely the most intelligent, well-spoken, gracious, beautiful woman who spoke the truth about World War II history and never let herself be bowed or knocked down, even though she spent 2.5 years in prison, and she also spent many years being hounded and persecuted and going through the court system just ad nauseum endlessly. Like, for example, 12 days after she came out of prison in 2020, I guess it was, because she went in May of 2018, so to 1920 till fall of 2020, November. 12 days later, she was already hauled into the courts again for not new charges, just charges that were still pending because so many charges were leveled against her. Why did she go around stabbing people or bashing, you know, doing vandalism or, you know, robbing banks? No, it's for speaking the truth about World War II and asking the question, where did the crime of 6 million take place? And she never got any answers. She wrote letters for 5 years to all kinds of, you know, organizations, to different levels of government. She wrote letters to every single Jewish organization she could find or, you know, find out about. Wrote them with a simple question, where? Where did the crime of 6 million murdered Jews take place, this so-called Holocaust? And nobody ever answered her. And so,
Monica, you mentioned that yesterday on that meeting that we did together. And what kept going through my mind was, why not just say Auschwitz? Well, wouldn't that be the, I'm not saying that's the truth, but wouldn't that be the simple answer to end the debate? I'm really surprised that she never got an answer. It's bizarre.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that I can explain a little bit more about that very thing. They couldn't say Auschwitz, even though that is the most infamous of the work camps, and I put the emphasis on work camps, concentration camps.
Yeah.
Yes, the people were there in against their will, because they were, you know, they were put there if they were communist, and there were other prisoners there as well who were non-Jews. Just in the beginning, just criminals out of the jails were sent there because they needed work done. It was wartime, right? So it was a work camp. But anyway, you know, that's the notorious one that everybody has in their minds, that, oh, it's at Auschwitz. But several problems with that. One, even their own, you know, historians, the exterminationists, we could call them, the Holocaust historians, they themselves backtracked on their numbers. They subtracted 3 million from their plaque that used to say 4 million were murdered here. And four is not six, but they, it's because it's just one of the camps, right? But they said, you know, Jews were murdered in other camps too. But let's just take them at that number of 4 million. Then after the Ernst Zundel trials in the 1980s, they quietly downgraded the numbers to 1.5 and then later to 1.1. So basically they subtracted 3 million from the total of six. But yet in Jewish math, 6 minus 3 still equals 6. And I guess we're going to have to continue this after the break, Eddie, because there's, yeah, a little bit more to say about
yes,
that.
Dear sister, we will come back to you right after this break. And I know our family can't wait to hear more about it. Be right back, folks.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR as hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Hey, Blood River Radio fam, we're going to go right back to my little sister, Braveheart. So glad she's back here. Oh, before I forget, Sister Monica, where are y'all going to be talking about tonight on your program on Republic Broadcasting?
Well, tonight's show, we're going to have one of the founding members of the Truth and Justice for German Society on, and we are going to talk about, appropriately enough, National Socialism. Because many people, even in the conservative thinking people, so in other words, people who are on our side and are largely awake about, you know, the fact that we're being lied to, many of the people within our ranks don't really have a good understanding of what is National Socialism. So we're gonna take that and give it a little bit more attention and, yeah, give a little more detail to that. So that's
well, how can they listen to that?
Republic the website is republicbroadcasting.org. Okay, so that's where you find it, the website, and then there's a listen live button there, so that's where to find it. And if you can't listen to these shows live, you can go to the archives on that website and find any of the hosts and any of the past shows, because they do archive everything. So that's where you go, republicbroadcasting.org. Thanks for asking.
Well, I'd like to suggest another way. Oh, you're very welcome. I'd like to suggest another way they might be able to listen to that program. If I could persuade you and some of your cohorts to come on and talk about that same topic on Blood River Radio someday soon. I would love to have you do that.
You mean the topic that I just mentioned? National
yes,
socialism.
Ma'am.
It's a great idea. Great idea, Paul.
I would love to have you come on.
Somebody
Paul,
else
are
to...
you a member of that?
He certainly is.
Sorry?
He certainly is, yes.
Oh, great. So, I want our listeners to know this. I'd like to invite, beg, borrow, and plead, et cetera, to get y'all to come on this show and talk about that at the top. Because our people need to know about, I don't know all about the mechanics of how it worked anyway, but let's do that. I like, you know, our audience here, they're more like family. I like them to know what goes on. So I would love for you and Brother Paul to put that program together, like much like what you're doing on your show tonight, later tonight. And bring it on Blood River Radio, man. I'd love to have you do that if you'd like to.
I'll ask the guest. He goes by online name of Oscar. He's been on before on my show, episode 4, way back in July. I'll put it to him. So I would say probably.
Or it could be just you and Paul.
And
I'm sure
Paul,
you and Paul.
I don't feel qualified to be that person who explains National Socialism in great detail. So, Paul, maybe you do?
I would like somebody who's more of an expert. I mean, I know some things, but I wouldn't want to carry the football completely on that.
See, one of the things that I said right from the first show that I did on the Flip Side with Monica on the Republic Broadcasting Network is that I am not an expert in very much at all. I'm an expert in my own experience. And, you know, my own experience comes out of the fact that I did do a little bit of looking into matters around us and opened my eyes and realized that we're being lied to on a grand scale. And then I spoke out about it, and then I went to jail. So that's my story. And I'm an expert on my own experience. Right. But I'm not an expert on a lot of things other than, yeah, I can play the violin. That's all right too. But I rather get guests to talk about things that they are really knowledgeable about. That's what I like to. I mean, Eddie, you've said the same thing about your own show, that you've said that many times, that you try to get good guests on. So anyway, but I want to just continue with Paul had addressed something very important there. Why wouldn't they just have answered Ursula Haverbeck's very simple question and said Auschwitz? And I started to explain about their own numbers, how they had to reduce them after those trials because it became so blatantly obvious that their plaque of 4 million having been murdered there by the evil Nazis, I put that in big air quotes, couldn't even be close to the truth. And even their 1.1 million isn't close to the truth either. However, you know, they had obviously always maintained that there were other places where they put Jews into gas chambers and whatnot. But the other part about it, this is the other problem with just answering simply, is that their own story has changed so often over the years. Because, you know, when they were really under fire about those so-called gas chambers there, they started to say, well, it didn't, I don't know if they all said this, but some Holocaust historians said, well, that's not really where it happened. It happened in the farmer's buildings next door, like in German, the Bauernhof, which is the farm next door, like maybe their barn or something. I don't know what they meant by that. But so they started to change their own story. And before that, their story changed many times. You know, at some point it was, you know, the prisoners were electrocuted or they were like, there were so many different stories. So they couldn't really even stick to their own, you know, narrative about these showers and gas chambers and whatnot. And anyway, they were so problematic, you know, the wooden framed windows and doors that open to the outside, just all the problems with it, so that they never answer her. They just don't bother. They don't bother engaging with somebody who wants to actually talk about facts. That's how Deborah Lipstadt puts it. Don't ever debate a Holocaust denier. So even just by Ursula Haverbeck's simple questions, asking the question, well, that would get into a discussion or a debate or an argument, right? So they couldn't even dignify her with an answer. And that basically is that.
That's the way they can control the discussion debate. We won't talk to you. In other words, we won't debate, and because you're a supposed Holocaust denier, we won't even answer your question. It's true, the numbers have changed. Apparently, right after the war, they were tossing around the figure 11 million. And then, well, that was so completely preposterous. Then it became 7 million, and then I think it was kind of, for about, you know, about 20 years, it was kind of vague, and then along came the Holocaust series in the late 70s, and now it was 6 million, and that's our story, and we're sticking to it. Now, up here in the Dominion of Canada, we cannot directly deny the so-called Holocaust. It's become a religion, you know, and I guess it's dangerous to be a heretic. So, brother, I do believe, but I only want to say this, the Red Cross that was there, unlike most other people, they were there in all the camps, and they said at the end of the war that something in the neighborhood of about 270,000 Jews died of all causes, old age, starvation, typhus, you know, of all causes. So that was their figure. But now in Canada, we must believe, brother, and I tell you this, we must believe in 6 million. It is preposterous.
Yeah, and just while we're still talking about Ursula, and I just want to, you know, maybe finish these thoughts before the break at the bottom of the hour, but a lot of people, I've seen so much on social media, and I'm so glad that, you know, the whole world has heard about Ursula Haverbeck now, and that is just wonderful. I just want to clarify and correct some mistakes that have gone out online. A lot of people have been saying, oh, it's just so terrible that she died in a prison cell. No, she did not die in a prison cell. Now, that does not mean they were trying to put her into a prison cell right up until the end, which they were, because she did lose her appeal from, you know, on yet another one of these court processes, the, you know, charges for the same old thing. She lost that, I think it was back in May or June or something. And then since then, you know, the authorities have been trying to figure out where to put her, first of all, which, how can they house a 96-year-old, very frail, elderly woman in a jail or maybe a jail hospital or whatever. But I guess her lawyer did also, you know, there was a lot of negotiation, shall we say, but she was at home and she always had people with her right up until the end. So that is a very good thing. I was so relieved. But, you know, the other aspect of that is that I was thinking, and I even talked about this a few weeks ago, the authorities, the criminal thugs who were running the show there in the occupied nation that is referred to as the Federal Republic of Germany, they probably didn't actually really want her to be in prison at that point, because they would have known that had she died in a prison cell, then her martyrdom would have caused, you know, a million times more attention, or maybe even 6 million times more attention to be shed onto her and shine the light brightly on her, that there could be such a state that would put a 96-year-old woman into prison for words and thoughts. Can you imagine?
Well, when did she get out of prison last time? Hell, she wasn't a spring chicken. Then she was...
She turned 90 while she was in her last prison stint. You're absolutely right. That was no young person. You're absolutely right, Eddie.
She sure, So they will put a 90-year-old person if you buck the Jew. We'll talk more about that as soon as we come back with our brother Paul. Be right back, folks.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-504-8790. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-504-8790. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-504-8790.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
A Greek city addressed by the Apostle Paul is combining the old and the new.
Thessaloniki, Greece's second largest city, is opening a new subway system, blending ancient archaeological treasures with modern transit technology like driverless trains and platform screen doors. The project, which began in 2003, uncovered almost 300,000 artifacts, including a Roman-era thoroughfare and Byzantine relics, many of which are now displayed in its 13 stations. Despite delays caused by preserving these findings, the inaugural line has been completed, with a second line set to open next year. Keith Peters reporting.
Texas Education Board voting to allow Bible teaching in elementary schools under optional new curriculum. The vote allows schools to begin using the material in kindergarten kids through the fifth grade classrooms. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. Campbell's ditching the soup, well, at least in name.
That change has now received shareholders' green light. Campbell's Soup Company announced its intention to change its name just over 2 months ago, saying it wanted to instead be known as the slightly shorter Campbell's Company to reflect the 155-year-old company's full portfolio. The new name will officially be effective following an amendment filing to the company's Certificate of Incorporation. According to New Jersey-based Campbell's, its iconic soup brand and red and white packaging will not be affected. John Scott reporting.
Daniel Penny has chosen not to testify at his trial in the death of an agitated man that he choked on a subway train. Defense lawyers resting their case Friday in the manslaughter case concerning the death of Jordan Neely. Closing arguments expected after Thanksgiving. Penny has pled not guilty. Prosecutors say Penny was reckless. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Tell you something, boy, if I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Folks, real power is something that you do take, and sooner or later we're going to take that power back and do what has to be done, or we're going to be exterminated. Anyway, with that, folks, with that little blip that I just put in there, we're going to bring Paul back. And Paul has, he's a wealth of information. He knows a lot about Miss Ursula Haverback, and he also, before we get right out of time, we're going to talk about the invasion of Canada, about these militant Sikhs, these militant Indian Sikhs. But go ahead, Paul, take off anywhere you want to go. Would you like to say something about Miss Ursula?
Well, I think Monica has covered the basics. I did meet her once. I was at a conference that was held in Cologne, and Bishop Williamson spoke there. She spoke, I believe, and I met her the next morning for breakfast, and she would be, this is 10 years ago, about 8 years ago, she would be 88, I mean, very up in her 80s. She was very ramrod straight, not bent over, very tastefully dressed, a real high-class lady, and she spoke quite good English, and she was very thoughtful. She just oozed class and dignity. That was my impression. Never mind what she said. I mean, we all know, or most of us know, the little particulars. But that was my impression. And she really showed her character in all that she went through. And, you know, there's a legal term, abuse of process. But what they do in the West, and certainly in Canada, and certainly what they did to Trump in the United States and Ursula, is an abuse by process. They put you through the ringer. And sure, she won a number of her appeals. She only went to jail once. But those are years, like well over a decade. She's before the courts, being made notorious by the lying press. Under pressure, and no matter how brave you are, you've got to worry. She was also fortunate, and I think we have we owe a big shout out to her lawyer, Wolfram Narath. I met him. I've actually met him a couple of times. He's a very, very shrewd lawyer. He represented a number of political prisoners. I think he was Monica's lawyer, but
yes,
she'll better than I were.
Yes.
That.
Carry on, Paul. You're right. I just wanted to confirm that he was my lawyer, and I think very, very highly of him.
Well, he was her lawyer, and I think things would have gone a lot worse for her if he hadn't been so, he was clever, and it's just the appeals. The appeals cost money, but they do buy you time. The state would have been quite happy just to toss her right into jail. But the appeal buys more time, and you might indeed win the appeal. That is what I call the abuse by process. They put you through this ring, and they do that not to desperate criminals and murderers, but to dissidents. And we've got a dissident who's on his way to jail in Canada now, a fellow. Who was one of the leaders of a trucker's convoy. They threw the book at him for all sorts of Mickey Mouse charges, like resisting arrest, mischief or counseling mischief, whatever that is. And he was acquitted on three counts, but found guilty on five. And the state will be jumping up and down wanting jail time for him because they want to punish dissidents. If you just go out and shoot somebody, not such a big deal. If you're one of these Negro gang gunmen who are blasting away at each other over some piece of triviality, they're back on the street before the ink on their fingerprints is even dry. They're out on bail. A political prisoner that we've talked about before, Les Borie, he's now pushing 2 years in prison without bail, and his great crime wasn't shooting anybody or wounding anybody. Well, he did wound some people, some privileged minorities' feelings. He had a little podcast, and he said some harsh things about a certain minority. I can't remember what it was. It was probably Icelanders, but anyway, they will not give this guy bail. And he's a political prisoner. The system is very lenient on people who commit violence, very harsh on dissidents.
Exactly.
Let me ask a real quick question to you, Paul. You're talking about that appeals cost money, they can buy you time. In a countries like Canada, more so in Canada and the United States at this point, what happens to judges that rule in favor of the victim or the plaintiff, if I'm using the right terminology? What if they rule in favor of somebody like Les Borie, and rule if they give him bail, what happens to those judges? Because I would think they're going to come under fire themselves. Am I right or wrong there? Are they afraid to rule honestly?
Well,
go ahead, Paul, in one word, exactly right. You hit it on the nail, but go ahead, Paul.
they won't be thrown off the bench. That's not the way control is exercised. But if we're talking about the federal court, there's only, I think, about 200 of them. They all live in Ottawa, believe it or not. They're not spread out across the country. They all know each other socially. So there's a lot of social pressure to not deviate from the woke line. You know what I mean? Not all pressure is necessarily, if you give Les Borie bail, we'll kick you out of your job. No, it's not like that exactly, but you feel under social pressure. And I know a famous case, a libel case, it's over 20 years ago in British Columbia, where, one of our people sued a communist professor and I think it was the local media for just a string of outrageous lies that were told about her. The judge had a reputation for being a conservative. His name was Dermot Owen Flood in Victoria. He eventually ruled in her favor. He ruled that she'd been libeled, and he gave her a fairly good financial settlement. However, in his ruling, he said that, of course, she was a despicable person, and she was a disgusting, and she had violated the hate law with her comments, but nonetheless, the things that were said against her were false and therefore libelous. Well, okay, she won, but that judgment was poisonous. He basically convicted her of a crime she was never charged and never would be charged, actually. Even the good guys are bad, at least up here.
That's absolutely pathetic. I was just wondering, there's got to be somebody above the judges, though. Of course, we all know who that is.
Sister Martha,
would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, when I was, when my lawyer asked for, what do you call it? Like get out on bail, awaiting the trial, right? And in Germany, so there were several bail hearings, and they came back, with the most unbelievable story that they just made it up as they went along, that, you know, they didn't ask me these questions, and then they said things, well, we don't know about this or that, but they should have just asked. Anyway, they just made things up. They actually just lied in their response why they were keeping me in jail and awaiting trial. Because otherwise, I mean, I could have gone and stayed at my brother's place and given up my passport and go check in with the police once a week or once a day, whatever. Could have been bail conditions like that, awaiting trial. But no, they didn't let me go. And then my lawyer, Wolfram Narat, who you just mentioned, Paul, he explained to me afterwards, you know, if these judges are even seen to be at all lenient towards a Holocaust denier, even though this would just have been talking about bail, not even about a verdict, if they are seen to be at all lenient, they will be skewered in the mainstream media in Germany. They will be absolutely skewered, and it can be the end of their career. That is how serious this is over there.
You know, we're up against the break, but are we ever, are the German people, because they're the German people are more under more strict penalties of like that than we are here in the United States and probably even Canada. Are the German people ever going to rise up, Monica? I know you're not a mind reader, but will they ever rise up and throw off that big Jew gorilla beast?
Well, they have before, and they will again, and the time is near. That's what I would say. Yeah.
I hope and pray for that. When we get back after this break, I guess we'll have to start talking about the East Indian thing. So we'll be right back, folks.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
In the morning. It smells like victory.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Ooh, they're red, white, and blue. And
well, Blood River Radio family, seems impossible that we're in the last segment of the circuit hour, but that's the way it is with the way time flies, buddy. But anyway, we're going to go back, and we have a great, well, it's not great, it's a scary topic about what's going on in Canada with the ethnic cleansing. That's, we hope to God it doesn't wind up to be, you know, genocide. But, Paul, you were talking about this about 2 weeks ago. 1 to 2 weeks ago, you were on the program. You talked about, you said you made it was a long trip. And I'm pointing out the fact that Canada's probably larger in landmass than the United States. And you made a long trip across Canada. and you were stopping in this these shops. I liken those shops you stopped into. We have a big chain called Dunkin' Donuts. They sell coffee and donuts and cookies. And you said you will lead off, tell the people what you saw, and then after you give a prescription of that, Sister Monica sent me a thing from X about what the East Indians are doing in Canada. And so if you will, go ahead and take off on that, Paul, then we'll go to Sister Monica to cover that X article that she sent me. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, yeah, in October drove three-quarters of the way across Canada. I drove from Kelowna, British Columbia to Hamilton, Ontario, which is near Toronto. And so I got to stop a lot along the way. And there's a chain of donut coffee shops, pretty much like Dunkin' Donuts in the States. It's called Tim Hortons, named after a famous hockey player who owned it originally. Anyway, of these, of the probably 15 stores I stopped at, 12 were staffed by East Indians. Now, that's incredible, especially in places like Swift Current or Saskatchewan or Battleford, Saskatchewan, or Wawa, Northern Ontario, towns that would be all white except maybe for a few Native Indians. Where are these people coming from? And every hotel I stayed in, at the front desk, there were East Indians. And I'll have to say that they were typical third world, utterly incompetent. Now, this is a small thing, but they claim to have a business office. Well, it's a computer on a desk with a printer beside it in the main lobby. And what I would usually do is try to print off a map quest to take me to the next town. And the first place I had trouble, I turned the computer on and it said that it needed a driver. Okay, so I go to the front desk. I ask the East Indian. I said, the computer needs a driver. Oh, I'm new here. Well, I said, okay, maybe you're new here, but I need to run off these directions. Can I use your computer? Oh, no. Okay. then a hotel in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Thunder Bay. Same thing. This time I get my map quest all ready, all done. I want to print it. Printer has no tip paper. Go to the front desk, East Indian there. I said, the printer doesn't have any paper. Can I have some paper? Oh, I'm new. Yeah, I said, okay, you're new, but can I have some paper? or get me some paper. It's third world. I've traveled extensively in the third world. It's not always bad, I mean, to be fair. But generally, things are just a complete screw-up. That's why it's third world, not first
it's
world.
It's funny, but it's sad.
But you know, some of these incidents may sound a little funny, but we are being invaded. Everywhere you go, small town, big city, hordes of East Indians. Many of them, not all, but many are Sikhs. And they are a fractious, violent lot. And Monica will tell you about what one Sikh was chanting on the streets of a suburb of Vancouver. Monica?
Yeah, it wasn't just one. It was the whole bunch of them. And I think they were out for some kind of maybe they had their own Sikh holiday or whatever. They were all out in the streets in some kind of a big parade or whatever it was. And they were chanting at the white people, just Canadians, ordinary Canadians, go back to Europe, go back to England. We own Canada. We own Canada. And they were very hostile. It was unbelievable. I mean, I saw videos of this. That happened in Surrey, BC. And I also heard that in Calgary, similar things happened. And is it Brampton, Ontario, Paul, that is so predominantly Sikh?
Yes.
Sorry, Paul, I'll just say something. This is kind of funny. I always thought, All my life when I'd heard that word said, it was pronounced seek, and it's spelt S-I-K-H. And I had always heard seek, but they always say sick on the mainstream. So I laugh my head off, actually. I think it's hilarious that, like, CBC Radio says the sicks, the sick, the sick Indians. Yeah, you betcha they're sick.
And when they describe themselves, it's like they have a lisp. It's like sick. We're six, but the problem is that they tend to organize. They are extremely powerful in the Liberal government. In Trudeau's first cabinet in 2015, he had four Sikh members, including Minister of Defense, who was a complete incompetent and blowhard and liar. And that was 16% of the cabinet. They are less than 1% of the population. And the Indian government's beside themselves because the Sikhs, some of them, are organizing for the breakaway of the Punjab, and they call it Khalistan. The Khalistan movement doesn't have much support any longer in India, but there's a real hotbed of them here, and they're violent people. And the Indian government has repeatedly warned about it. They warned about the bombing of Air India back in 1986. And the Indian government did not have exact intelligence, but they said, you've got to take precautions. So the Sikhs planted bombs on a Canadian Pacific airline headed to Japan. And the idea was the bombs would go off after they left Japan over the Sea of Japan and kill everybody aboard. Well, the plane was late. The bombs went off in the baggage handling area and killed two baggage handlers. The Air India flight that came out of Vancouver heading to Britain, it blew up, killing everybody aboard off the coast of Ireland.
Damn.
Including two of my former students. We are bringing people here who don't respect us. Imagine the gall, the insolence of that guy shouting, this land is our land. Our land? No, it's our land as Europeans. We built this damn place. We settled it. And they wouldn't have a pot to cook their curry in if it hadn't been for us. But, you know, our leaders encourage this garbage. They're always running down our history, promoting multiculturalism, which is basically confusion. It's a Tower of Babel.
And it's replacement of the white people. That's what it is. I mean, you know, diversity is basically anti-white. That's what it is. And what about the Komogatu incident, which it was a bunch of criminal Sikhs coming over and the Canadians didn't want them. And now sometime later, didn't Trudeau apologize to them? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the Komogatu Maru was a ship that came to Canada in 1914. It was a smuggling operation to try to test Canadian law. It were about 376 East Indians, most of them Sikhs, not all, but most. It was organized by a radical Sikh. The Canadian government wasn't quite sure what to do with them. It made them sit in the harbor in Vancouver. Wouldn't let them off. That was a good thing. And then finally decided to kick them out and said, you must leave Canadian waters or our one gunboat, which was the Rainbow, would put you to the bottom of the streets of Juan de Fuca. And they left. Well, the Sikhs have wailed and moaned and groaned about racism and that ever since. The conservative Harper government apologized. The Trudeau government apologized and gave them a bucket full of money, but it's still not enough. There was no need for any apology. This land was our land. They were invaders. They were illegal. And the government of the day under Sir Robert Borden kicked their dusky butts out.
And not only were they just trying to get into the country, and somebody might say, oh, they just want to live here, you know, and be nice people. No, they were criminals.
Yeah.
And then generations later, our governments are apologizing. And of course, everybody has this wrong history, you know, lesson. It's just completely wrong.
Folks, I wonder if the I wonder if the government officials there, these white self-haters, I wonder if it's ever dawned on them that once the Indians get a critical balance, and they get a predominant population, if they will lose their jobs to the Indians, the British court system will be entirely in the Indian. They'll be kicked out too. Well, people, we've run completely out of time. Paul and Sister Monica, I would love to thank y'all so much for coming on tonight. I really do. I'll be in contact with both y'all, and like to get y'all back on to talk about the National Socialism sometime. Anyway, folks, that's about it. We're going to transition into the third hour. We're going to bring on my brother, the Bitter Ender. So be right back, folks. Go get some coffee. This is a long break, 5-minute break.
Thank you.